Thanks for joining us. I'm Steve Roberts, sitting in today for Diane Rehm while she's attending a public radio conference, but she'll be back in this chair on Monday. Magical, enchanting, spellbinding. Just a few of the words being used to describe a new novel about a mysterious circus that becomes the setting for a life-or-death competition between two young magicians. The story of how the book came about is equally fantastic. A high six-figure advance, rights sold to 31 foreign publishers, a movie option by the production company behind the Twilight movies, and an audio version voiced by the same actor who did the Harry Potter series. The title of Erin Morgenstern's debut novel is The Night Circus. And Erin Morgenstern joins me in the studio. Delighted to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
Our email address is drshow@wamu.org. 1-800-433-8850 is our number. Erin Morgenstern, why a circus? You're not the first writer to write about a circus. You know, Water for Elephants was a huge hit just a few years ago. But what did you find so compelling about it?
I actually don't like circuses. I'm not a big circus person. What I found interesting about the circus as a setting is that it lends itself well to being the sort of entertainment that you can immerse yourself in, mm-hmm. that you don't just go and sit and watch a show. It becomes the entire world that you're in for, and I think that lends itself well to being a magical sort of location. And I liked some of the trappings of a circus. I like stripes and popcorn and that sort of thing.
Costumes.
Yes. I'm not big on clowns, but I've yet to have any complaints that there are no clowns in my circus.
What is your favorite circus part of the circus?
I love the feats of like strength. I love like that sort of the acrobats and that sort of amazing things, like in the same way that dance is always very impressive to me. I think that sort of physical body work is interesting to me as a circus entertainment.
You want to be amazed.
Exactly. I want to see things I don't see every day.
Our producer here at the Diane Rehm Show, who read your book and said to me, I kept reading it and I wanted to join her circus. You must get that a lot.
I do. I have a lot of people who want to visit it. The fewer who want to actually join it. Most people just want to go and see it for themselves.
But it's inside your head.
It's hard to visit because it does exist only in my imagination. But people can visit it through the book, which I think is kind of amazing that I invented a place and now people can go there in a way.
Well, we talked about all these astounding commercial successes already. The book's out a week. What about a theme park?
A theme park might be a little much for me. I would love there's a British theater company called Punch Drunk that does immersive theater. And if someone wanted to do an immersive theater production of it where you actually walked into a space to experience it, I think that would be marvelous.
So that would be sort of like a theme park.
Exactly. It would be more of a smaller scale theme
theatrical,
park.
An interactive theatrical
exactly.
experience. You say you're not a big circus fan, but were there experiences you've had or things you've read that, you know, channeled their way into your imagination? What were the influences here?
I think I have a lot of different influences. I think there's a classic sort of fantastical storytelling vibe. I was always a big Alice in Wonderland mm-hmm. person, mm-hmm. and that sort of Wonderland idea that there's a strong kind of Roald Dahl, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory mm-hmm. flavor going
Favorite
around
book
in there.
Of my grandchildren,
And I think that's the kind of thing I grew up on and kind of never really let go as a flavor that I enjoy. And I think that's where the tone and the whimsy of the circus comes from.
Now, I'd love for you just to give our listeners a hint of the tone. The very opening passage of the book, which is you call anticipation.
Yes.
I'd love for you to read it to give our listeners a flavor of it.
Certainly.
To use your word, flavor. Go ahead.
Anticipation. The circus arrives without warning. No announcements precede it. No paper notices on downtown posts and billboards. No mentions or advertisements in local newspapers. It is simply there, when yesterday it was not. The towering tents are striped in white and black, no golds and crimsons to be seen, no color at all save for the neighboring trees and the grass of the surrounding fields. Black and white stripes on gray sky, countless tents of varying shapes and sizes, with an elaborate wrought iron fence encasing them in a colorless world. Even what little ground is visible from outside is black or white, painted or powdered or treated with some other circus trick. But it is not open for business. Not just yet. Within hours, everyone in town has heard about it. By afternoon, the news has spread several towns over. Word of mouth is a more effective method of advertisement than typeset words and exclamation points on paper pamphlets or posters. It is impressive and unusual news, the sudden appearance of a mysterious circus. People marvel at the staggering height of the tallest tents. They stare at the clock that sits just inside the gates that no one can properly describe. And the black sign, painted in white letters, that hangs upon the gates, the one that reads, "Opens at nightfall, closes at dawn." What kind of circus is only open at night, people ask. No one has a proper answer, yet as dusk approaches, there is a substantial crowd of spectators gathering outside the gates. You are amongst them, of course. Your curiosity got the better of you, as curiosity is wont to do. You stand in the fading light, the scarf around your neck pulled up against the chilly evening breeze, waiting to see for yourself exactly what kind of circus only opens once the sun sets.
It's a lovely opening, and I must say, to tell our readers, the book itself, the end papers, are black and white like the circus.
Black and white stripes, they're beautiful.
And I find that they're mesmerizing. I mean, they're almost hypnotic, the stripes, and they start swimming in front of my eyes. But that's in keeping with the mood you're trying to set in.
It really is. The book design itself, even the interior pages, it is so beautiful and evocative.
And particularly those stripes. But you mentioned Alice in Wonderland. When I heard Night Circus, the first children's book I thought of was In the Night Kitchen by Maurice Sendak. When you think of particularly of his most famous book, Where the Wild Things Are, there is a fantastical dimension that he captures that reminded me of this book, too.
Oh, that's a very high compliment to be compared or even like evocative of Sendak. I also love picture books in general. My mother is an elementary school librarian, so I'm well-versed in my picture books. I'm also a big Chris Van Allsburg fan.
Well, also, this book started life as a children's book.
And it sort of did.
Talk about the evolution of it.
It sort of did. It wasn't so much this book in particular, but I thought I might be more of a children's writer or a YA writer. But I think as I developed my own voice and sort of tried to write more what I really wanted to write, it sort of started to skew a little more adult market. But I think it has that sort of universal appeal where it can appeal to younger readers as well.
So you think that the younger readers who, for instance, have read Harry Potter might be interested in that?
Oh, I would hope so. I think it's not really a sort of book that has to be just for adults. I think younger readers could certainly read and enjoy it.
The name of this book is The Night Circus. Aaron Morgenstern is with me. We have some lines open, so give us a call at 1-800-433-8850 and join the conversation with Aaron. And one of the things that, of course, as the story evolved, there's a love story right at the heart of it. This book went through so many revisions. How many years did you work on it? And talk about the evolution of the love story at the center, and particularly the character Celia, who didn't even appear in some of the earlier versions.
This is true. It's a kind of a long and complicated saga how this book came to be. I started doing National Novel Writing Month in about 2003 or so.
And for our listeners who don't know what that is, tell them what it is.
It's kind of a writing challenge. It's the point is to write 50,000 words in 30 days, which is a lot of words.
It is a lot of words.
But I was always the kind of person where I thought I'd like to write, but I never got words down on paper. I would write a page and hate it and abandon it and be overly self-critical. So doing National Novel Writing Month was a good exercise for me in just writing and just not worrying too much and just getting words down on paper. And then I had something to work from, which was a really useful thing for me. So in 2005, I never really planned for National Novel Writing Month. I would just kind of go in on November 1st with a vague idea and see where it took me, which sometimes worked and sometimes didn't. So this particular year, I got very bored very fast. So I sent the characters to a circus. And the circus was immediately much more interesting than anything else that was going on. So I sort of shifted my focus to just writing about the circus. And I did that for the next 2 years of National Novel Writing Month. I spent the entire month of November just exploring the circus and coming up with characters and histories and tents and just without any sort of structure in mind, just kind of exploring it as an imaginary space. And then I kind of took all of that material, which indeed my main character in the final version is not even in, and tried to make it a little more book-shaped.
Well, for listeners who are not familiar with National Novel Writing Month, we do have a link on our website so you can learn more about it. But it sounds like it was a combination of discipline and permission. It sort of created a space in which you could work, a space and time.
Exactly. It's kind of freeing to both mm-hmm. just have the need to just write and write and write to meet a goal, and also has that magical deadline that you can't put it off because you only have the 1 month. And 1 month is not that long to spend on a kind of crazy project.
So you really found it a very useful discipline and experience.
It worked really well for just kind of loosening me up as a writer and allowing myself to write. And I think because it was such a large amount of writing, because I did it for years and years, this past fall was the first time since 2003 that I didn't do it. But it let me figure myself out as a writer.
But you describe those early manuscripts as a mess.
Oh, they are a mess. They have, there's no plot, there's no structure. I don't even think it's fair to call them manuscripts because they don't have beginnings or ends. They're just sort of a lot of stuff. But it was a lot of good raw material to work from.
And you talk about, you use the image of the iron fence around the circus, but you talk also about putting an iron fence around the novel to give it structure.
It did. That's what it needed. It needed a structure. And I think once I put it into five parts and kind of gave it more of a plot, that's where it sort of started to come together.
And from the time you put it down on paper to now, how long has this been, really?
That first inventing the circus was in 2005.
So it's been a long journey.
Yes.
Erin Morgenstern, the journey ends with The Night Circus, a new novel which has been optioned for the movies. 30 countries bought the foreign rights. Our conversation will continue with Erin Morgenstern and with you. So give us a call, send us an email. I'm Steve Roberts sitting in for Diane, and Erin and I will be right back. Welcome back. I'm Steve Roberts sitting in today for Diane while she's away at a public radio conference. And I'm talking this hour with Erin Morgenstern, 33 years old, first-time novelist, living now in Boston, graduate of Smith College. And her book is The Night Circus. And you can join our conversation, 1-800-433-8850, drshow@wamu.org. And we were talking about how your original manuscripts years ago were a mess where you had to impose discipline and structure. And one of the ways you did this was by seeking out an agent who helped guide you through this. Now, I gather it took you a long time and many false starts to find someone who would even help or mentor you.
It didn't take too long. I started querying literary agents in summer of 2009 and got a lot of requests, probably because I had an interesting sort of conceit just with the circus itself, and then a lot of rejections because it was still a mess. And I don't know what twist of fate landed me on Richard Pine's desk, but he called me up and said basically that it was a mess, told me it needed to be completely rewritten, and I really, really expected him to say, good luck, kid. And instead, he offered me a contract, and I ended up not accepting it at that point. I had a couple other agents who also thought it had potential but needed work, so I revised it independently for several months and then sent it back. And they all said, no, it's not quite there yet, because I had mostly just added bells and whistles. And so I put it away for about a month and then overhauled it. And I think it was May 2010 when I sent it back, and it got the stamp of approval. And I signed with Richard Pine and did a little more tweaking over that next summer. So.
And people don't really understand that often that an agent can play a editorial role. Mm-hmm. I think he or she is just there to sell the book. But you found that it was very important to have someone guide you from mess to structure.
Yes, and he never told me what to do. No one ever told me what to do. Mm-hmm. But having people point out what wasn't working was really helpful for me to have that mm-hmm. perspective mm-hmm. of this is what is working. The setting was working, but the circus was sort of the focus at that point, mm-hmm. Which wasn't working. It needed to be more of a setting for another story. And that story, adding that on top of what I had, just kind of atmosphere-wise, was what made it kind of come together.
Now, you're also a visual artist, among other things, I've been reading that you've painted a rather wonderful deck of tarot cards. But and in fact, we hope by the end of the show we will have some of your artwork up on our website so people can see some of Aaron's original artwork. But one of the things that you talk about that I found so interesting in the writing process was how you're translating pictures that were inside your head, and that in some ways you start from a visual perspective and then put it into a verbal mode.
I really do. I'm a very visual person in general, so I'm always picturing every image, every scene, everything I picture in my head, from the way a room looks to the way the room is lit. I have mm-hmm. to kind of translate the images into words. Sometimes I'll even just hit on one or two words or phrases that capture the picture properly, and I work from that.
And one of the things we've mentioned is this, even before it was published, this book has been optioned for the movies, a visual medium or a merging of visual and verbal media. How do you feel about that? You know, you spend all these years as sort of the sole person working on this book, and suddenly your baby becomes the property of all these other people.
I think I tore it apart too much to think of it as a baby. That seems very violent. I feel like my part, even though it was a long, complicated process, my part's done. I have the book. It's my job is done, and where it goes from here is up to other people. And I'm kind of excited to see what they do, trying to translate it for film, because I think a book is one thing and a film is another, and you can do things in a book that you can't do on film, and vice versa. So I'm really curious to see how they approach it, and I'm especially curious to see how they visually interpret these things that I never wrote. I mean, I can imagine these things in my head, but I never wrote with the intention of someone is actually going to have to make these costumes or build these elaborate cuckoo clocks.
And would you like to be involved in it? Most authors want to be involved in the script. It sounds like you'd be as interested in being a costume designer or a set designer.
I would love to see like sketches and plans and all of that. I think that would be marvelous.
And of course, a number of the reviews have compared you to J.K. Rowling, who I guess has now said she's done with the Harry Potter series. This is such a phenomenally successful. Do you recognize yourself in those descriptions?
No. it's still hard for me to consider myself a writer, much less an author, much less a successful author, and especially not on this sort of scale. It's still strange to me that it's an actual book. So the response has been incredibly humbling.
But what do you think about that's in here, Aaron, that people are connecting to? I mean, it is so hard to get a first novel published. Once you get it published, it's so hard to get it noticed. And here, there's just been an explosion of interest, an explosion of fabulous reviews in the Washington Post and other places. What do you think people are seeing in this book? Or is it something you intended? Is each reaction a little different? Talk about that.
I don't think I could have ever intended to be this entrancing as it seems it is. I say, I'm not sure what I did, but I'm glad I did it. I think there's something about I always loved books that felt like journeys, books that are escapes, that feel like someplace else to go to when you open the pages. And I think I tried, and it seems I succeeded in capturing that sort of feel where the circus itself and the story as well, it's someplace that people like to visit, and it kind of captures the imagination. And to go back to the sort of Harry Potter comparisons that keep popping up, I think people want to go to the circus the same way people want their Hogwarts letter, and you don't have to just be 11 years old to go to the circus. It kind of has that wider range of possibility.
Actually, we have a number of emails and that want to ask you questions, and one of them comes in from Cheryl, who says, is this book targeted for adults only, or is it appropriate for teens? You started talking about that,
yes,
particularly given the Harry Potter comparison.
It definitely has. I think they call it crossover appeal, that it would appeal to young adult readers as well. There's not a lot of content that's inappropriate. It's written in a way that I think is accessible on a prose level that I don't think has a reading level. They always have those reading levels on children's books.
Yeah,
so, like,
yeah.
I don't think it has a particularly overwhelmingly high reading level. But I think it was always intended to be a book for adults because I love that sort of magical, whimsy feeling, but you don't often get it in adult market books. And I mean, I'm 33 years old. I don't want the 16-year-olds having all the fun and all the magical books. So I definitely think younger readers can read and enjoy it, and as well as older readers.
And one of the dimensions of your reading process that you've talked about a lot is are tarot cards. And you made this deck. In fact, some of the characters, I gather, were taken from other literary characters that are favorites of yours. And talk about how you used this whole world of a tarot reading as part of your writing process.
I started reading tarot cards maybe about a decade ago. I'm not very good at it, but I do love the symbolism and the iconography and just the artwork of tarot decks. And so when I was looking for new visual art projects, it seems like a good project, so I wouldn't have to keep thinking of what to paint next. So I'd have 78 paintings that I'd know what I had to paint next. So kind of while I was writing, like concurrently with the novel, I was working on this black and white tarot deck. It's called the Phantom Wise Tarot. I kind of lived in monochrome for a very long time, and it has little flavors of the circus. It was never meant to be a companion piece. Actually, historically, it would be inaccurate for it to be the tarot deck from the book because it is a Rider-Waite-style tarot, which is a little bit later than the late Victorian era of the book. But there are little flavors of Alice in Wonderland in there, and little nods to the circus. That card that's the Hanged Man is a man in a tuxedo and top hat, which is the same as the Hanged Man from the acrobat tent in the circus. And I actually don't remember which one came first.
Are there plans to bring out your tarot deck?
No concrete plans. I would love for it to happen. There was a very limited edition of just the Major Arcana done years and years ago. So,
One other question, then we'll get to our callers. How has this changed your life, apart from the fact that you're running around the country? And you're about to leave the country, right, for the first time.
I just got my passport over the summer. I think completely is the answer to how it's changed my life. It's very strange and very disconcerting and wonderful. It's wonderful and odd all at the same time. I like to say it's like I have new life shoes, and they're really pretty shoes, but they still pinch my toes.
And is there one thing you went out and bought? You're now making a lot more money than you did before. Is there one thing you always wanted that you actually went out and bought with your first check?
I didn't buy anything with my first check. My first check sat on my desk for about a month because I didn't know what to do with it. But I did eventually get the leather sofa that I had coveted for years and years. So. And now, of course, I don't get to sit on it because I'm all over the country.
Let's talk to some of our listeners. Lewis in Vienna, Virginia, welcome. You're on the Diane Rehm Show.
Hey, thanks for having me. Great show. Aaron, congratulations on your book. I was just curious, you know, when you were recounting your story about trying to find an agent, and you made your first round of submissions, and someone talked to you, and they sent you away, you mentioned that you went back and did some rewriting, and specifically added some bells and whistles. And having worked in the film business with writers before, you know, the phrases like that sort of imply, like, okay, there is this bag of tricks that all writers know, and I'm going to go back and play with some of these. Could you talk a little bit about what those lists are?
Sure. I started with not a lot happening. So what I did was I tried to add things that seemed like action to me. More things exploded. And that sort of idea, just because I didn't, at that point, I was being a little reluctant about restructuring and really kind of going and doing the heavy lifting that it needed. So I kind of tried to add an extra level of stuff happening, which was good because some of the things I added, like I added an entire character at that point. I added Hector Bowen, who is now a very key player. But I added things mostly to make things more interesting or have more things happen.
And But you said earlier that when you added the bells and whistles, it wasn't enough.
No, it was.
It needed a much more basic.
It didn't address the structural problem. I made things explode, and I added like more things happening, but it still wasn't a good solid plot, and it wasn't helping with the story structure.
You mentioned Hector Bowen, who's the father of one of the magicians who are at the center of the story, but. In talking about the movie, is there anybody you have been thinking of as potential stars? I mean, you have mentioned in other interviews that at least Hector Bowen, you had someone in mind.
I did. I'm not the kind of writer that I picture actors when I write. I know some writers have that kind of very distinct image of like what kind of actor they would want. But for some reason in my head, Hector Bowen was always Jeffrey Rush. Maybe not even looking exactly like him, just had that Jeffrey Rush air.
But what about, now, of course, what happens in movies is that the script often pares down the story and leaves out some secondary characters. At the core of the story, the two magicians who fall in love, you have any ideas who might play them?
No, I really don't. I think that the main character, I have my actors who I thought sort of looked like them, like Lee Pace was sort of a Marco looking in my head a little bit, but now he's probably going to be too old, which is unfortunate. but I haven't had any real specific actors in mind. I would love them to find unknowns or that sort of thing. I think that would be interesting.
I'm Steve Roberts, and you're listening to The Diane Rehm Show. Let's talk to some more callers here, Aaron. Tirumal from Crofton, Maryland. I hope I've pronounced your name correctly.
Yes, you did. Thank you. Thank you for taking my call. Ben, Aaron, congratulations. It is such a wonderful voice you have. That's another beauty here. The thing is, when you started to read the passage, the first passage from the book, when you first started, I said, the thing is too flowery for my taste. Okay. But as soon as you said the words that, you know, the except for the green trees against the circus tent, oh, my God, I said, this is fabulous. This is fantastic. Because as soon as you said the word green, I had a clear picture. I could actually see it. Okay. So it was that powerful. Thank you very much for doing this. So the only suggestion I have is, how would you like to do an audiobook of this?
There is an audio version. I'm glad I didn't have to do it myself. But Jim Dale, who has the most marvelous storyteller voice, it's so transporting. He's done an audio version for Random House Audio, and it is amazing. I got to see a little bit of the recording in the studio, and it's phenomenal. I'm okay at reading, but he is amazing, and he does all the voices, too.
And you aren't tempted to do it yourself?
No, I'm good. I'm getting better at just reading certain passages, but I don't think I could handle doing the whole thing.
Okay. Thank you very much for all this. I really appreciate it. And I'll get both of those, print as well as the audio.
Okay? Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you. We now have a picture that you drew, Aaron, of the lovers in a gallery on our website, so drshow.org. So folks who want to get a sense not only of Aaron's wonderful voice and that Tirumal was just talking about, but also some of her visualizations. You can go to our website, and we're a multimedia operation here, like you are. Let's talk to Marty in Bethesda, Maryland. Welcome. You're on the Diane Rehm Show.
Hi. I read the review in the Washington Post, and the book I thought of was something I read ages ago. I think it was by Ray Bradbury, and I think it's called Something Wicked This Way Comes, and it's about a very macabre circus that sort of comes into town at night, and very nasty things happen, and it kind of disappears. Have you read that, and were you influenced by it at all?
I have indeed, and I remember the film version from when I was very young, kind of catching it on television, and I think it's kind of seeped its way into my subconscious because I haven't read it in years and years, and actually while I was working on the book, I sort of avoided all the circus novels, but that one kind of was way back in my memory, and I'm sure it had an influence on the tone.
Thanks very much. Yep. Thanks very much for your call. Appreciate it, Marty. Thank you. Were there other novels that were back in your consciousness, you think?
I think there were definitely ones from even ones that I'm more conscious of. Susanna Clarke's Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell, I think, is definitely probably an obvious influence with the sort of dueling magician angle and the wonderful Victorian tone. And Christopher Priest's The Prestige, both the novel and the film version, I think added a lot of sort of flavor reference. I'm big on talking about flavor. One book that had, I know, sort
was
of a...
Water for Chocolate?
One book that had sort of a structural influence, well, not maybe a content influence, was Einstein's Dreams by Alan Lightman, which is one of my very favorite books of all time. But it's told in these beautiful little vignettes, and I think that's where I started getting my very short chapter sort of structure from.
You know, any writer, I think, absorbs influences. You don't make anything up entirely, right? You stand on the shoulders of other people.
I think I pull from pretty much anything I've ever read or seen, or I pull references from all sorts of things. There's a whole aspect of the book that's very scent influenced because I'm such a perfume person.
Erin Morgenstern, her book is The Night Circus, her debut novel, going to be a movie, going to be sold all over the world. And you get a chance to talk to her here on the Diane Rehm Show, so give us a call. Erin and I will be right back.
National broadcast of the Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, dedicated to the idea that all people deserve the chance to live healthy, productive lives at gatesfoundation.org. By the William T. Grant Foundation, supporting research to improve the lives of young people, online at wtgrantfoundation.org. And by the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, helping NPR advance journalistic excellence in the digital age. This is NPR.
Brad Pitt is starring in the new film Moneyball. On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Pitt about some of his movie roles and about his childhood, the religion he was brought up in and why he left, becoming an actor, and dealing with the stalkerazzi that are always lurking around his family. Join us.
Welcome back. I'm Steve Roberts, sitting in today for Diane. She's away at a public radio conference. She'll be back on Monday. But meanwhile, I get to talk to Erin Morgenstern, who's written a wonderful new book called The Night Circus, her first novel. 1-800-433-8850 is our phone number, drshow@wamu.org. We have on our website links to a National Novel Writing Month, which is November, which had a big impact on Erin's early development. We have some of her artwork up as well. So call us and join the conversation. But I have some emails here, Erin, that
okay.
I want to read to you. Circus and Magic, writes Craig from Rockford, Illinois. Circus and Magic, it's happened before. I refer to The Circus of Dr. Lau by Charles G. Finney, published in 1935. Her reading sounded like a lift from this book. Does the author acknowledge any influence or inspiration from this book?
I've never read this book.
Well, you got to get it.
Yeah, I would love to. I was avoiding circus books for a very long time because I didn't want to have that sort of direct circusy influence. But maybe it seeped into my subconscious somewhere, or I read it in a...
Kathy Snodgrass writes to us, I'm curious as to whether or not the author is familiar with W.D.'s Midnight Carnival, a collaboration between my late husband, the Pulitzer Prize-winning poet W.D. Snodgrass, and the visual artist Delos McGraw. There, too, the carnival doesn't begin until nightfall.
Oh, that's marvelous. And no, I haven't heard of this.
So there's another one for your reading
list. I know.
All this free time you're going to have flying between cities, you can put those two on your
list. I'll have a list.
It's been a tradition, writes Yvonne from Chicago. It's been a tradition that the Midnight Circus performs every Halloween on Daly Plaza in Chicago. They also perform in theaters. Not your usual circus and not as marvelous as Cirque du Soleil. But the Midnight Circus in Chicago, that's one you got to put on your
list. Oh, I had no idea there were so many nighttime circuses. This is marvelous.
You talk about Cirque du Soleil as one of your favorite visual media.
I've actually never seen Cirque du Soleil. I've seen little bits and pieces and snippets, but I haven't actually seen the show. But I think it's much more of a Cirque du Soleil-flavored circus than a Barnum and Bailey idea.
Well, including the character of the contortionist, who sounds like he's right out of Cirque du Soleil. And Deb writes to us, I would be more than happy to create the Night Circus as a real virtual world on the computer. People could visit her night vision as an avatar and have a wonderful life. If this is interesting, let us know. Longtime computer game executive and now create virtual world to move education forward, or your commercial vision. And please look at our virtual Times Square. Anybody suggested this before of creating
people
a virtual?
People have been talking about, there have been whispers about doing some sort of like online or video game or that sort of, I think it would kind of lend itself well to that idea of a virtual world.
And particularly since, as we were talking earlier, so you've gotten so much the reaction, including from our own producer, that she wants to join the circus or visit the circus. Mm. And if we rule out Erin World, with roller coaster rides, this could be another version of it.
It could be very interesting.
Well, Erin, let's talk to some of our listeners who want to join this. And here's Deborah in Fort Myers, Florida. Deborah, welcome. You're on the Diane Rehm Show.
Hi. Thanks for having me. I have a question for Erin. First of all, I'd like to make a comment. I really, really enjoyed her book. I just finished it yesterday.
Oh, thank you.
And I have it downloaded on my Kindle, so I did not have the opportunity to see the beautiful artwork. But visually in the book, even without seeing it, I thought it was very visual, the colors, because it does have the black and white backdrop in the story. My sister in New Jersey just downloaded it on her Nook yesterday. And I'm so happy to hear that you're going to be making a movie. I think it's going to be stunning, and I can't wait for it to come out. I just wanted to know, are you having any plans to write another book soon?
I am working on another novel. It's very different. It's not the circus was never meant to be a series or anything like that. It's just its own standalone novel. The one that I'm working on right now that is still in those messy exploration stages is sort of a film noir-flavored Alice in Wonderland.
Oh, wonderful. And you know what I really liked about this book, too, was the Victorian backdrop to the story. And I really do believe this story can cross all ages and venues, so it will be accessible to a lot of the public versus just one portion of the public. And I just wanted to say thank you. It was a marvelous story, and I plan on reading it again next week.
Oh, great. I'm told it holds up very well to rereading.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Deborah. We had another email, by the way, from Brian, who asks, please ask Erin Morgenstern about her internet project, Flax Golden Tales. What's that?
On my website, erinmorgenstern.com, I keep a blog. And about 2 years ago, as a way to make my blog look more writerly, I started writing 10-sentence short stories that I post every Friday that are inspired by photographs that are taken by my friend Carrie Farrell. And they're little bits of whimsy. They were partly inspired by Chris Van Allsburg's The Mysteries of Harris Burdick, where you just had the image and a very short snippet of a tale to go with it.
I was our caller who Deborah, who loved your book so much, she mentioned something that I wanted to ask you about, which is the historical setting. This is very much set in Victorian times, and it seeped in that historical sensibility. Talk about that decision and that choice and the role of the historical period plays in your in your vision here?
It's always been one of my favorite historical periods, especially visually. I love the fashion and the corsets and the top hats and that sort of gas lamp street light idea. It visually, it was what I wanted. And it's also a perfect time period for that sort of traveling circus idea. And my circus was always sort of a circus dressed in evening wear. So I thought the whole time period really lent itself well. And I like historical fiction. I like fiction that has almost a timeless quality, and I think setting it more historical gave the circus that element of feeling a little timeless when you're dealing, you have trains, but you're not really worried about like cell phones and things like that. I think it works well for storytelling.
And you've used the word a number of times in our conversation. You've referred to light, and you just did again about gas light. And of course, since the circus takes place at night, it sounds like part of your sensibility is that you're supposed to sort of view this scene through the flickers of a gaslight, not through some, high-powered spotlight.
No, it's not a sunlight sort of circus. It's that starlight, firelight idea. I studied lighting design in college, which I think made me extra conscious of how things are lit. And I think there's something so interesting, and that plays into the whole idea of the circus being very black and white, because I think, especially in photography and in old film, everything in black and white is very much about light and shadow, which I think makes it very interesting visually.
Has anybody brought up the possibility of actually doing this movie in black and white?
Oh, no, I don't think they've gotten that far. I think they're still trying to, like, get organized, but maybe we'll see how they actually want to shoot it once we get to that point.
How about John in Kill Devil Hills, North Carolina? Welcome. You're on the Diane Rehm Show.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate you giving me the chance to be on the air. And I tell you, every time I listen to an author on Diane Reams, I always add another book to my to-be-read pile. They always make me excited about their books. So, Aaron, I look forward to reading your book.
Well, thank you. I hope you enjoy it.
Thank you. I am an aspiring writer as well. It's also exciting to, you know, hear someone break through and make it into the big time. It gives me hope. And I had a question about your process when you're writing your story. Did you have like a group of readers? I'm in a writing group, for example. I'm sure you're familiar with it, where we all kind of share our stories around and comment and critique, and everyone's at about the same level. And I find it helpful, but then I also hear on the other side, sometimes people argue that it's not the way to go, that you get, you know, you can pick up bad habits or get bad influences. I just wondered what you used in your process of writing the book.
I have one critique partner. I don't have a whole group. I just have the one. But she's invaluable to me. And I kind of experimented with a bunch of different readers to kind of read and give me feedback for a while. I was very lucky to find one person who saw things in a very useful way and could give me feedback in ways that it made me realize things that needed improvement. And she doesn't tell me what to do, and she doesn't, like, give me specific suggestions always. But she's very good at, like, being, this part isn't working, and you know it's not working, and you can do better than that, which is a great thing to have. I think you can get too much feedback sometimes, and especially since feedback is so personal, that if you're dealing with a lot of conflicting opinions, it can get difficult to listen to your own voice, which is really the most important.
Good point. John, thanks for your call.
Hey, can I just throw one more thing out there? I also I edit for a online magazine called Everyday Fiction, and we do flash fiction. And if you like short stories, send us one. We'd love to have some from you.
Great, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, John.
Bye.
This question of a writer's group. I teach a writing class, and I find that if you're going to do that, I think it can be very helpful. But you have to create a sense of safety and reassurance so that people walk through the door knowing they're going to be criticized, but criticized in a constructive way. If it tends to nastiness, then it doesn't work.
Yeah,
out.
I think you need that sort of balance where you're hearing what isn't working, but you also hearing what is working. So you don't get the sense that, like, nothing is working. You need to know what works and what doesn't.
And this is also the cheering each other on. As John says, he's cheered by the fact that you've succeeded. Writing can be a very lonely enterprise, and you sometimes need that reinforcement just from friends who say, keep at it, you can do it.
It helps. It can get very discouraging. I think there were points that during the process where I was so discouraged I nearly threw out the manuscript. But
really? That
yeah.
That.
Well, I think there was the point where I knew that the whole thing needed to change. And I think it's very daunting to look at a 300, 400-page manuscript and know that you need to change most of it after you've done all that work already.
Veronica in Canton, Ohio. Welcome. You're on the Diane Rehm Show.
Yes. Am I on the air? This is
you
Veronica.
Are. Please go ahead.
Yes. I have a question for Aaron. I haven't seen your book, so I really can't comment on your book, The Night Circus. It might be a wonderful book. But when I personally think of the word circus, I think of the animals. I think of the elephants, the tigers, the lions, and horses, who unfortunately suffer tremendously from cruel training, being caged and trucked from place to place, particularly with the Barnum and Bailey Circus. Mm-hmm. So I would just like for you to address this issue. You may not, your intention may not be, but by using the word circus, you might be inadvertently promoting circuses like Barnum and Bailey, which does a lot of cruel things to animals.
Veronica, thanks very much for your call. I'm Steve Roberts, and you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. Please go ahead and answer, Veronica.
My circus isn't that kind of circus. The only animals in my circus are cats, and some of them are kittens, and the rest of the animals are made of paper and sort of these amazing mechanical creatures. But my circus actually isn't really that sort of traditional circus. It's more of a performance art or installation art exhibit dressed up in the trappings of a circus.
And we talked earlier about at least the tangential connection to something like Cirque du Soleil, which also doesn't have.
Yeah, it's much more of a Cirque du Soleil style circus, which I think when I think of circuses now, that's sort of more of the association that I have. I think circus as a word kind of encompasses more than maybe it used to.
Good. All right, we've got time for one or two more calls. And Brian in Spring Branch, Texas, welcome. You're on the Diane Rehm Show.
Oh, hi. Thanks for letting me speak. I have another "What did you read?" question. It's for Miss Morgenstern, a book called Nightmare Alley by William Gresham. It's a 40s noir kind of story that takes place in a carnival, actually.
I have heard of it, but I haven't read it.
It's marvelous. I found it in a graphic novel form several years ago, and I just ate it up. But I'm looking forward to your book.
Great, thank you.
Thanks again. Another book.
I was going to say I'm going to have a long list of books to read.
But now your new project is set in.
Yeah, I was going to say this sounds perfect for me because I've been in a very sort of film noir detective novel mindset lately too.
Did you find it difficult to go from the 1890s to the 1930s?
No, I found it refreshing to be doing something different.
Did your clothes change?
I am wearing stockings with seams right now. So,
but no hat.
No hat. I have a big head, so I have trouble finding hats that fit me properly.
You should be wearing some kind of fedora thing, right?
I'll go on a fedora hunt and
all
find
right.
a right one.
All right. Any of our listeners know, we can send an email. One more. Carrie, Fort Bragg, North Carolina. You get the last word, Carrie. What's up?
Hi, good morning. Hi. I just wanted to say I look forward to reading your book, Ms. Morgenstern.
Thank you.
I wanted to comment on, you said you were going to do a film noir movie based on Alice in Wonderland. And I had an inspiration. I was thinking you might want to try and team up with the Quaid brothers on that.
I haven't
Are
done any.
Are you familiar with them?
I have heard of them. I haven't been doing much collaborative work, so that might be interesting. I'm used to writing alone in my office with my cats.
Ma'am, this would be for the visual aspect of it.
Oh, I'm not thinking that far ahead yet. I barely got the rough draft done, so.
But it's a good idea. The Quaid brothers were featured just, I think, yesterday on a big national public radio story, if I'm not mistaken,
Check out the Piano Tuner of Earthquakes. They are some of the most interesting visual effects I have ever seen.
Ooh, excellent. I shall.
Very, very kind of half in a dreamlike state.
Very nice.
Maybe
anyway, I'll let you have the rest of the show.
Okay, thanks. You know, maybe one of the things we can do here is post on our website some of the reader suggestions.
Oh, that would be
you
great.
Know, of other other books that, since you obviously triggered a whole literary conversation here about other references. Final word here. We had a number of other callers. And we get a lot of calls along this line because we've got a lot of people who listen to the show who are home and they're writing. Any advice? You struggled for a long time. You finally made it. What would you tell young writers?
Oh, I think my favorite writing advice I'm actually going to steal. I believe it's Neil Gaiman who said, keep writing and finish things, which I think is the best sort of advice because you can easily just keep writing and not ever have a finished product. So, and I think being sort of true to your own writer voice is also extremely important.
And going back to your earlier point about novel writing month, that did provide you a frame to finish.
Yes, to keep writing and to finish things.
Well, November's coming up, and you young writers out there, you can find a reference on our website to what Erin's been talking about. Erin Morgenstern, what a pleasure.
Oh,
her book is The Night Circus, a novel. It's coming to bookstores near you and eventually a movie near you. and maybe The Night Circus, Erin Morgenstern theme park.
Maybe someday.
I'm Steve Roberts sitting in today for Diane Rehm, and we're delighted that you spent an hour with us. Thanks a lot.